You listen to 247 Real Talk. This is your host, Julian Perry. On this episode, I'm going to attempt to discuss anti-gun, pro-gun, and common sense gun laws without igniting any sparks. I'll be right back. So good evening to all my listeners. Welcome to another episode of 247 Real Talk Podcast. It's my pleasure to be with you this evening. It is just about 12 minutes after 11 p.m. on Wednesday, June 8th. And this is going to be as quick as possible. And I usually say that and they go on for quite a while. But I think this is going to be a short one because it's late, because I have to be up at 4 a.m. And because the subject matter that I'm going to discuss can be very contentious, and it is not my desire to ignite any flames or to cause any controversy. It's my desire to simply share information and for people to recognize what's really going on, or at least think about it. So I take a deep breath there. We've been dealing with a lot of shootings lately. Across the United States, a lot of mass shootings. And so, as a result of that, we have situations where, you know, there's been a call for gun reform. There's been a call for gun laws. There's been a call for action, right? And this is the issue that always occurs every time we have a mass shooting. We have a situation where Congress and lawmakers are called to act, and unfortunately, the pain that people feel is not really addressed in the manner it should be. Rather, the pain that we feel is addressed as a political football. I was on my way home today and I was listening to 1010 Winds, as I always do in New York. And this woman was crying. She was wailing. And I felt so bad because she was talking about guns. But then she said something that, you know, is amazing. She said, "Stop passing these laws. We've had 10 years, 20 years of laws passed and nothing has changed. It's gotten worse." And someone may listen to that and say, you know, what is she talking about? But she's right. She's right, because if you ever take a good look at the laws that are passed, they do nothing to prevent shootings. We need to be honest. We need to start with having a conversation that both the anti-gun, pro-gun, and even those down the middle can come together and make a real difference and benefit our lives in this country. The people who I've spoken to people, and let me make a disclaimer. I'm a firearms instructor. I love shooting. I shot competitions. I enjoy it. Okay. I'm a law-abiding citizen. And it is your Second Amendment right. But I don't want to invoke that. What I want you to understand here is this. Every time there is a shooting, politicians want to take the crying baby, and then I say crying baby, I'm not meaning that as an insult, I mean that as an analogy, and rock them to sleep so they stop crying. So what do? They go out there and they pass these laws so that they can later on in elections and in primaries claim, you know, elect me again, or elect, because, you know, I passed these, you know, helped pass, or I passed these gun control laws. But what did the laws do? They did nothing. And we're going to examine a few things here in this conversation. The first thing is, I'm going to go back to what I said about anti-gun and pro-gun people coming together. The reason that there's such a divide is because everybody is resolute in their position. Because nobody's listening to each other. They're not listening to each other. Two sides are not listening to each other. I've spoken to anti-gun people, and when I say anti-gun, I mean ban all guns, get rid of all guns, that's it. Well, you got to be logical. United States is a country that guns existed forever. And it's only in modern times that, you know, different states have required registration. And it's been something that people have enjoyed doing, whether they do it for a living in places like Alaska where they hunt or wherever. So there are hundreds of millions, and that's not an exaggeration, hundreds of millions. If you figure that guys do really, you know, 300 and something million people in the United States, how many of them are people who, if we split it down the middle, okay, we get, what, 175 million people who enjoy shooting, and they all own multiple guns. So that's not an exaggeration. The point I'm making is when we start having logical conversations and practical conversations, we will start making a difference. Now, let's look at something like background checks. I am a mixture of everything, and I've always been on my podcasts. So not only is banning guns to me out of question, but for many reasons, I think that this is just not practical, and it's just not something that is right, because as law-abiding citizens, what did the law-abiding citizens do that their rights should be taken away? And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that to put the law-abiding citizens' gun rights over lives. That's not what I'm saying. And I want you to listen to me, because I know this is a very emotional conversation for many. If you've lost someone to gun violence, it's very difficult to listen. But what I'm saying to you is, when you create laws to prevent gun violence, those laws need to punish the criminals, not the law-abiding citizens. And this is where the divide starts. We have a system of bail reform in many states, New York included. Our own mayor here in New York has gone to Albany and has asked them over and over again that to make changes in that law, because the system has become a revolving door. Nobody is looking and paying attention to the fact that we have criminals. What comes to mind right away is a couple of cases. I remember one case I heard recently where someone was arrested and charged for shooting someone, and he was out on bail awaiting sentencing for a gun charge. I remember this case in Chelsea, I think it was downtown Manhattan, where there's a young Asian lady came home from a club 4 o'clock in the morning. A guy followed her into her apartment and stabbed her 41 times and killed her, or 44 times and killed her, something like that. But he had been arrested 41 times and he was on the street. So you want to make a big dent? Start there. Make laws that punish criminals. Create a system of fairness where people go to court, where they get a fair trial, you know, whether they can afford the richest or the most expensive attorney or a public defender. Enforce the laws equitably. Make sure that there's no systemic racism and bias in the process. If the person is guilty, then you need to sentence them in a manner that they don't have the opportunity to get out and do it again. And you set an example to everyone else out there. There's no more revolving door. You're going to jail and you're staying in jail. But it doesn't end there. And like I said, I hope to make this a short podcast, but I can feel it revving up in me, because, you know, there's a side of this I spoke about in my previous podcast, where this society, these same lawmakers, are part of the system, are part of the quilt that produces the criminals via oppression, via systemic oppression, systemic racism, providing only certain avenues for them to gain any time of I won't say wealth, but decent living, in the sense of you know, being a human being, I have the right to work hard and go out and buy a car and buy a home or whatever. When you can't get a good education, when you can't get out your neighborhood, when they won't give you a mortgage because of the color of your skin, when the teachers in your neighborhood are crap, when nobody invests in your neighborhood, when there's nowhere for you to go, when the only way out is the silver lining, is a spoon of sugar you're being fed, and that spoon of sugar is drugs. Okay, you're manipulating a neighborhood, like I said before in my past podcast. And then when you create it, and this has been created for decades and it continues today, we have lawmakers today who are now admitting that something like systemic racism exists. So because of that, and you've created the same criminal, and when that criminal pulls the trigger, you don't take the blame. You completely ignore the reality of your life, your doing. When I say year, I'm talking about these politicians. I'm talking about rich America. But let's go on from there because I don't want to digress too much. The point I'm making again is if you want to make a difference in crime, you have to make changes to the bail reform laws. You have to make sure that criminals go to jail. And whether or not you have issues one way or the other with law enforcement, I'm sure they appreciate what I'm saying too. Because everybody has a job of some type and you don't want to go out there in the street, whether you walk into the store and get shot or whether you're going out there as a law enforcement officer or get shot, or whether you're going to work as a business owner and get shot, whether you're going home from work late at night and you're ducking behind cars because you hear gunshots. And what happens? And listen to me carefully. It is the mass shootings that have brought the attention of the nation that have forced the lawmakers to act, and then they act in a way that we should feel disrespected. So when you hear people say that they're against more gun laws, understand the issue before you get angry. And again, that is hard for someone who has been a victim of gun violence. But I'm saying this to you before. Let's take a look at the laws that passed in New York. One of the laws that recently passed says they're going to raise the age of someone who wants to buy an AR-15, and I'm going to talk about AR-15s in a second, but someone who wants to buy an AR-15, they're going to raise the age from 18 to 21. And everybody jumps and says, yeah, that's right. You know, if you can't drink, you can't buy a drink, and you hear the people on the TV, on the radio, if you can't buy alcohol at 18, why should you be able to buy a gun? I'm not saying that is incorrect, but I want everyone to ask themselves, how does changing the age from 18 to 21 stop gun violence? How does changing the age of someone who is buying a gun from 18 to 21 change the person who's going to pull the trigger at 21 versus 18? What did you accomplish really and truly to prevent the next mass shooting? Be honest with yourselves. Then there's another law that says from now on, only law enforcement can buy body armor. And I can get why some people say, well, you know, you don't want to be, you know, have to defend yourself as law enforcement. You're shooting to someone, he's got on a vest. But again, you need to take care of the criminal. Because if I'll be honest with you, if I lived in a neighborhood as a law-abiding citizen, where whatever happened in my life, and I don't want to digress again into the systemic thing, but I don't live in the best of neighborhoods, and I own a house there, and I can't afford to move out, and I just have to live there. And I come home late at night from work, and there's been several occasions where I've heard gunshots, where I've had to duck behind a car, where I've had to run, and I still got to go to work, and that's my shift, and I got to come home late at night. Maybe as a law-abiding citizen, I'm saying, you know what, I'm going to give myself half a chance. I'm going to buy a bulletproof vest, and I'm going to wear it. I'm going to put it on before I leave work that night. What am I doing wrong? So you have criminals who wear bulletproof vests. So you punish the rest of the population and says you can't buy it because you don't feel there's any legitimate reason. I would also suspect that in that law enforcement clause, they're going to somehow make allowances for paramedics and EMTs because in many cases, they get to the scene and the shooter may still be present. So they need to wear it, and many of them do. But I'm not trying to pick apart laws here, okay? I'm just trying to say that when you hear people say, enforce the laws that run the books, stop infringing upon the rights of law-abiding citizens who are born, who live, who die, and never commit a crime except enjoying it as a sport and feeling they have the right to protect themselves. There's a longer conversation about the Second Amendment and what our forefathers really meant. Because it is my belief and the belief of many that they want to make sure, too, that the population can protect itself. We've seen governments around the world become tyrannical. Look at Putin in Russia. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So I know this is a controversial conversation. I know that many of you will agree, and many of you probably shaking your head and you disagree. And I'm not telling you have to agree with me. I'm just asking you to listen. I'm saying to you that if they have to sign new gun control laws, they must make sense. Let's talk about the AR-15 for a moment because it's a very sensitive subject with many people. But let me break it down for you. Unless you modify an AR-15, it looks like the M16 that the military uses or used to use, and immediately politicians brand it as an assault weapon, an assault rifle. Well, I'm trying to understand, as someone who's pretty knowledgeable about rifles and handguns, I'm trying to understand what's the assault part, because it looks like a military weapon. The AR-15, whether you like it or not, it shoots if it's not modified, and it shouldn't be, if it's a legal AR-50, like the guys who have used it in mass shootings, it fires one round at a time. A .22 caliber handgun, semi-automatic handgun, fires one round at a time. A revolver fires one round at a time. That means every time you squeeze the trigger, you have one round. A lever action rifle, when you trigger the lever, fires one round at a time. A pump action shotgun fires one round at a time. As long as they are, you know, a bolt action rifle, which requires an action, but requires one round at a time. The point I'm making is, if you want to have common sense conversations, stop the theatrics. There, and many of you may not be aware of what I'm about to say, but just take it for what it is. There are other companies out there, and I don't want to call the names of specific manufacturers, but because I don't want to create an issue here, but there are other rifles and semi-automatic rifles and other types of rifles that shoot the same exact caliber, 223 or 556 round as the AR-15, one round at a time. So we have found that many mass shootings are carried out by the AR-15. It is the rifle of choice. I'm not sure exactly why. Maybe the caliber, and along with the fact of how cool it looks. But the version that is sold to law-abiding citizens legally is not an assault weapon. An assault weapon would be a weapon like is used in the military that's fully automatic, where you can pull the trigger once and multiple rounds will fire. And I say this only because I hate to see theatrics when people like you and me and many others who are tired of seeing children dying and people being shot and black people being targeted and all this stuff want laws that will stop that. We don't want theatrics. I promise you that there are many, many other rifles out there that can do exactly what the AR-15 does. It just don't look like it. So while you would love to see the AR-15 banned because somehow it's symbolic, if you want it banned because it's symbolic to you, then fine. But if someone is bent on doing the same damage with the same caliber in the same way, they have many other choices. And what pro-gun people don't like, and I agree with them, is the theatrics. Like I said, I'm speaking from a common sense perspective. And in being fully honest, I am a mixture of pro-gun and common sense. I'm definitely not an anti-gun person. I think that we're long past the stage for that conversation. The world and the country is where it is already. We have to solve it as it is today. And we cannot solve it by creating emotional laws, and we cannot solve it by creating political laws. We need to have a system that actually lives up. We elect officials to run this country for the people, by the people. Go back to Buffalo again, where the shooting, where the guy, as I said, wrote the letter from school, where the state actually, I think it was a state, had him do a 2-day mental health evaluation. We're blaming all the other things. Have we stopped to say, what? Why did it fail? Why did the system fail? Because according to the laws that were already on the books, he should never have been able to buy a weapon. But those laws that when enacted were touted as the safest in the country, as an example to the rest of the country, failed. Someone or somebody didn't do his job. Secondly, why is it that we have these, even when they're not mass shootings, we have so many shootings in New York City, it's tiring. I'm exhausted by listening to the news, but I have to listen to the news. I'm polarized by it because I'm trying to figure out in my head what is going on. I don't remember. It was probably the 80s, the last time I've seen, at least from my perspective, this type of shooting. Maybe even a year ago or a little more than that, you would hear several shootings, but those shootings happened on the weekends. Now it's almost daily. Then there's been a crazy outburst of violence on the subways in New York City. You have bus drivers being attacked and stabbed. You have people walking down the street being randomly stabbed and slashed, and in numbers that I hear statistics that people say, oh, well, crime is down. Not according to reports I see. And the problem is every single time, it seems this way, that they catch the perp, as we call them, and they talk about it in the news, the person has had a record, and they've had a record that should not have allowed them to be on the streets. I'm trying to find this, so bear with me if I seem a bit disconnected for the moment, because I'm trying to find this. There was something that came out on 1010 Winds News today about a guy who was who threatened to kill MTA workers in New York who had been, I think it's like 40-something times he'd been arrested or something like that. But it's just a continuous failure by the laws that we have, by the justice system, by the criminal justice system. And it's complicated. Here's why it's complicated. We would like to absolutely believe in the criminal justice system and believe that it will protect us, because if someone commits a crime, that should be the only victim based on the level of crime. The system will take care of that person. We have these laws, we have prosecutors, we have courts, etc. But throw in the disparity of the socioeconomic disparity. Throw in the systemic racism that is finally being acknowledged. And what you have now is pushback, because in that system that was created to protect us, we found out that there are thousands upon thousands of minorities who were in jail or were in jail at one point and were innocent. Convicted either because they didn't have the means to get a good lawyer, or convicted because of the color of their skin, because of systemic racism. And so here we are in a conundrum, so to speak, because the same system that we want and we're begging to protect us from the criminals is the same system that's just criminalizing innocent people. I'm hoping that this episode raises more questions in your mind than answers, because I don't have the answers. I never said I did. I just felt that this is the time to for me on this podcast to shine the spotlight from my perspective on what I think is a very complex issue. And I don't know all the answers, but I think the answers come with conversation. And I think with conversation, we need to come together as people. For anti-gun people, I want to say, when you know things have happened, you're fearful, you have pain because you've lost a loved one to gun violence, and it is not that anyone is not empathetic or that we can even begin to feel your pain. But being illogical and being adamant and being stubborn or unwilling to listen is not going to get you what you're looking for. And I say to my fellow pro-gun people, we should be listening at least to what the others have to say. And then we work with them. And I think the burden is more on us, because we have to convince, unfortunately, we have to convince others of why we like to do what, you know, the sport of shooting. Or for people, make the point of people who have to use guns for survival in, you know, Alaska and other parts where they hunt their food, respectfully. Competitions around the world where people are just good at it. The actual relaxation you actually get from going to the range and putting up targets and enjoying the fun of it safely. If you have not done anything wrong, no one has the right to take something from you. And this is why we have this divide that we can't join. It's because one side believes that the solution is to take everything away from the other side. And the other side believes that the only way they keep their rights is to not give in to anything to the other side. And somewhere in the middle is a solution that protects us all, protects the rights of those, you know, and I hate to say this, and I know people are going to give me blowback for this too, but the fact is, the guy who enjoys shooting as a sport and the guy who enjoys golf are not that much different. Okay? Yes, not many people walk around taking a golf stick and bashing someone's head in and taking their life, but I'm not talking about that. That's irrelevant to the guy who's a law-abiding citizen who never has that intention. And so I'm hoping that people stop and think when they hear this podcast. People hold our politicians accountable. People don't so quickly feel relief because gun laws are passed. I mean, think about it for a second. We understand that they, for instance, I think they one of the laws that right now that they're trying to pass in Congress is about high capacity magazines. Well, let me be honest with you. They're probably, if there's hundreds of millions of guns out there, there are probably billions of high-capacity magazines already out there, at least millions. Banning them now and future production of them is actually never going to happen, because I think there's, you know, military use and law enforcement use for them. And where that exists, there's someone manufacturing them. And therefore, where that exists, there's the opportunity for fraud for people who are not part of those groups to get them. So what are you doing by doing that? It only becomes an instrument of destruction when it's in the hands of a criminal. So your job, I think, as lawmakers, and your job as people who want to have the conversation and who are going to be open-minded enough to listen to each other, is to figure out how to stop the criminal from getting their hands in the high-capacity magazine and not simply taking it away from all law-abiding citizens because you see it as a symbol of destruction when realistically, it's only that in the hands of a criminal. I don't know if it's a federal law or if it was a state law, but I remember there being a law that said, for instance, I'm going back to body armor, that anyone could possess body armor, and it only became a crime when you were found in possession of a body armor committing or having committed a crime. Then it becomes criminal to have it. But I'm sure that enough people could find scenarios to tell you why they need it. Because there are a lot of us out there who live in neighborhoods where we call the police, obviously, after the action or the threat has been realized. And that results in the same tears because the action has been done by the criminal. And then if you're unfortunate enough, you walk down the street one day and you see the same guy who shot your family member, whatever, walk in the street. Been in jail 20, 30 times and still gets bail. We are such an extreme set of human beings that even in bail reform, we still can't find common ground, something in the middle that provides fairness to people who are financially challenged, and fairness in so that there's no prejudice, and still make sure that criminals are in jail. It makes no sense to say, you know what, we've had this situation where a lot of minorities have been locked up unfairly, so let them all out. That's a stupid argument as well, and I'm a minority saying that. There needs to be a balance. We need to make sure that we have watchdogs looking at judges and their decisions so their decisions are not prejudicial. And then once we know that, we need to let the judges make the decisions and pronounce the sentences based on the recommendation of the law and not a political recommendation. The judiciary needs to be isolated from any other branch because it needs to be impartial. In New York, we talk about the flow of guns coming in from other states. And one of our problems with all the shootings in New York, as you hear our political representatives say all the time, is the flow of guns coming in, and the people in New York who are the criminals in New York who are getting their hands on these guns and shooting people. I 100% agree with that. But the key word there is the criminal. If you somehow manage to stem the flow of guns coming in from another state, let's say there's, you know, I think our mayor testified in Congress today, and I think Georgia, was one of the places they were saying the guns were coming in. So let's say, just for, and I don't want to insult anyone from Georgia. Again, I'm just making an example here. Let me generalize. Let's say we stopped the flow of guns coming into New York, period. So there's no more illegal guns coming into New York. We've closed every loophole. It doesn't happen. Does that mean that the criminal goes to sleep, reads a bedtime story, turns out the nightlight and says, hey, there's no more guns, so I'm no longer a criminal? Next, we're going to have a rash of something else. Stabbings, knives, whatever it is. Why? Because a criminal is prone to commit criminal acts. We still have to deal with the issue of why these criminals are continuing generation after generation, and have our politicians and have a certain part of society, you know, take responsibility for what has happened to minorities. But I'm keeping this on focus on just criminals. I don't want to muddy the waters too much, because then it becomes a larger conversation, and I want to stay laser focused on the criminal element itself. Banning all guns, stopping all guns from flowing to New York, may eventually reduce the shootings, and that would mean too that you've gotten all the illegal guns that are on the street of New York off the streets. But will it really stop crime? Now that two people on a level playing field with no guns, does someone die differently from a knife wound? Because a lot of people have been stabbed in New York recently. And will the criminal eventually perfect the art of using the knife so it becomes as deadly? Maybe, maybe not. But my point is, we are addressing everything else except addressing the criminal. I so much agree with our mayor, our honorable mayor of New York, begging Albany to make changes to the bail reform law, because these people are going through a revolving door, and the criminals now are getting to a point where they no longer respect the law because they don't believe that the consequences are anything that they can't bear. It's kind of like, oh, you know what? This person got locked up. Oh, don't worry. What did he get locked up for? He'll be out next week. When punishments start putting people away based on the crime, again, it has to be based on the level of crime. But when someone commits a murder and shootings, and they go in there and they're found guilty, and they get 15 to life or 20 to life or life without parole, there's no 20 times arrested and released, and 40 times arrested and released, then maybe the rest of people who are thinking about committing these crimes are going to recognize that it's just not a profitable way to go anymore. You know, it is beyond belief that we continue to have these conversations and we continue to look at each other in the face, and we can't speak the truth. We're not speaking the truth. We're hiding behind what we want politically. We're posturing for whatever the makeup is of the constituents in our areas that we're representing. Many people go into politics because they say they want to make a change, and they quickly become the change that we want to be gone. I'm tired of hearing of gunshots, of innocent people being killed. I'm tired of turning on the TV and watching people weeping for their children. What happened in Buffalo Texas, with 19 children, fourth graders. I mean, how do you kill children? What kind of evil? But then again, when we look beyond the act, and we look at the person, what did we create? You see, this is what I keep going back to. Here we have a guy, I think he was 18 years old. I'm not sure exactly how old he was, but he had a 183-page manifesto, and he believed in the replacement theory where black, I'm mixing up the two cases. The The case I'm referring to would be the one in Buffalo where he believed in replacement theory that killed the 10 black people in the supermarket. He believed in the replacement theory that black people are somehow replacing white people. Social media supported his ability to fester and to share this view and to build to a point of explosion. And then when the act is carried out, and the thing is, I think many of these mass shooters, most of them have a social media presence, and if after the fact, when they look at it, there's a very significant and blatant trail of what built up to that moment. Yet when it happens, we find everything else to blame, except what's really causing the issue. If you've lost someone again to gun violence, or to any type of violence, matter of fact, my heart goes out to you. As someone who has a family, I can't imagine your pain. There's an old saying that goes in the gun industry, guns don't kill people, people kill people. And many people want to disregard that right away as nonsense. Take away the gun and then how are they going to kill them? They're going to kill them somewhere else. Timothy McVeigh brought down a building or half a building or whatever with fertilizer and whatever concoction he made to create a bomb. Remember that? People who have the intent to commit crimes, have the anger, the rage, the hype, the adrenaline, whatever they want to do to commit a crime, are gonna commit that crime. And they're going to find the weapon they need to do it, whether it's a gun, a knife, a stick, a baseball bat, whatever. Obviously, it can't come in the numbers that we have in mass shootings. I get it. So let's avoid mass shootings by making sure that the guns are only in the hands of people who can responsibly own them. Those are the laws you need to be geared towards passing. Stopping the wrong people from getting guns. Not making laws that have zero impact on shootings, zero impact on crime, and punishing law-abiding citizens who have the right to carry and have done so respectfully, who have the right to own arms, I should say, because carry is a whole other issue, and have done so respectfully. People who are friends of law enforcement, even in the terms of supporting true law enforcement, supporting true communities, going out and doing things to uplift minority communities that have been oppressed for so long. That same person may decide that they want to own a gun, that they enjoy the sport. That same person might decide that if they're going to get up and go into a really impoverished disbanded or ignored community that is filled with violence, and they're going to walk in there to make a difference, and they think they can reach the people, that law-abiding citizen might want to put on a bulletproof vest and hide it under their shirt just in case. Now they can't. It's easy to make knee-jerk emotional decisions and make them become law. I'm really hoping and praying that all that I've said to you in terms of these laws is somehow I'm incredibly wrong. And by the laws that are being passed right now, we're going to see this massive and drastic change in killings and mass shootings. I won't hold my breath. I'm not sure I would recommend that you do. We need to be honest. We need to understand why we need to talk to each other. And when we start, and as a man myself, who is a spiritual man, a man of God, when we put God first, when we're open-minded and caring enough about each other to have a common sense conversation, when we're willing to put our personal feelings aside and actually look at the issues with an intelligent mind, Look at what we have and look at what the issue is and how we need to fix it. When we're not quick to rush to judgment on one side or the other. When we recognize that every single life, no matter what side you're on, is valuable. Every life lost leaves pain and destruction behind. When we're going to start looking at the truth of the problem, which is us human beings, rather than the instrument and ignoring the fact that if you leave the guy who swings the axe and you ban the axe, he can swing something else. That is when I personally believe that we will start to make true change, that we will start to blur the lines between the pro and con, because we will both be on a level playing field in terms of making common sense decisions. Whenever a law I remember when the New York Safe Act went into law, and I think it was one of the laws was you were only allowed to have 7 rounds in your magazine. I remember being at a range and being around all these law-abiding citizens whose faces were long and they were mumbling under their breath as they removed rounds from their magazine. I'd like anyone listening to this podcast and beyond to tell me which criminal did that. And which criminal stood up in their home and started shivering and said, oh no, I got to take 3 rounds out of my gun. Oh no. Criminals do not follow the law. Law-abiding citizens do. And they're not your problem. If you want to make a change, be honest and come together so we can preserve lives and ultimately do the right thing for ourselves and each other. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Your will, not ours, be done. I pray that we listen to each other and that we hear what each other has to say. Until the next time, I thank you. Take care of yourselves and each other.